Welcome to Business Second Opinion with Carol Sanford, a respected thought leader in the world of business design for growing people in order to grow your business. She always offers a contrarian view on what sacred temples of wisdom, such as the Harvard Business Review, advise. Her approach is based on living systems research and her four decades of practice with Fortune 500 companies and rockstar entrepreneurs. I'm Zach Swartout, and I'm your host. Today, Carol is giving a business second opinion on how to give better feedback. We're reviewing an article entitled How to Give Feedback People Can Use by Jennifer Porter from the October 2017 issue of the Harvard Business Review. Welcome, Carol.
Hi, Zach.
So, Carol, what does feedback mean and why are we digging into this subject today?
Well, I guess it depends on who you talk to. The primary definition of feedback in business today is someone tells you what they see that you need to improve in, basically gaps they see, where if you got really focused, you could really improve your performance. So it's an external person telling another person. I have to make a comment about, though, as you say, I have a contrarian view on that, which is there's a false assumption in that. It's just a huge assumption, which is based on the idea that people cannot see themselves, that they require others to see us. So there's a definition, but also that's what it's founded on.
Got it. So can you give us a little bit of the history? Like, how exactly did we get to this toxic practice and using it as widely as we do in organizations?
Well, there are a couple of things that have led us to it. I mean, it's helpful actually to understand that mostly it was metaphorically adopted from things that where it doesn't fit. And Elon Musk, you know, the founder of PayPal and SolarCity and Tesla, warned us a long time ago that using metaphors and analogies are incredibly incomplete and are rarely transferable in the way we make them happen. But in this particular case, we took a science which happened in the late 1940s called cybernetics, which was studying the regulatory systems in machine and mechanisms and created a naming or a way to describe what was going on as something called feedback. Now, Norbert Wiener is the one who described this, and he described it as the ability to correct or adjust the performance of a mechanism. Like, he uses the example of like a thermostat or an overflow valve. And the idea was to be able to shut it off when it got beyond what it was supposed to be able to do based on some external mechanism that was tracking it and determined it was outside of standards. I think from what I can see in reading is managers, or it's probably more likely a group of consultants or even university folks said, hey, let's just transfer that over. It was compounded by the idea that John Watson had told us in the School of Behavioralism, you know, how you manage others, that you can never study anything that you can't see. The senses have to be able to contact it. You can't look at what's going on inside of people. So combining this metaphor of where something regulates something with the idea that people can't see what's going on inside of people's heads and their ability to do self-regulating, you're now stuck with an external mechanism.
So what exactly makes this idea and kind of analogizing it or transferring it from cybernetics, what makes it so toxic to use in a business setting or with people?
Well, I have developed six premises about feedback, and it's kind of broader than even feedback, but more about how human beings work. And maybe we could run through, let's try a couple and just see if these don't give us a good foundation. If you think about all of the energy it takes to regulate other people, so think about parents trying to control their children, and you think about teachers trying to manage and direct their students. The first premise is that self-governing behavior is a lot more energy efficient. And certainly by the time people are adults, we've got a pretty good idea that they can be self-regulating. I mean, they can hold a job, they can get themselves fed, they can get themselves from one place to another. And for the most part, the average human being can be self-regulating. But what we've done instead of using that self-governing, self-accountable, self-directed behavior, we have instituted systems where other people are doing that managing. So first, that's just toxic because it's working against the very nature that would make something more effective for a business. And you're putting tons of energy of managers, human resource departments, into trying to manage other people. The second premise that makes it toxic is that we actually undermine the self-reflective capacity of people when we repeatedly have someone else do it for us. So you maybe can even remember as a child where you were constantly told whether what you were doing is right or wrong. And there was some point at which suddenly you had to be able to figure out what was right and wrong for yourself. And often you did not have the capacity, and we find children who don't develop that have a great deal of trouble being effective in society. And then, of course, the same thing happens when they get a job. I have managers who say to me all the time, what do you do with people who wait to be told? Well, it means that they have their entire lives been told whether or not what they were doing was right or wrong. There is one other problem, though, with this lack of building this self-reflective capacity and having it come from outside. There's a big difference between machines, which feedback mechanisms work really well for and prevent overflow and toxic waste going into a water system. And that is that humans are an open system, which is engaging, interactive, much more regulatory, self-regulatory, and regulating based on what's going back and forth between them and other people and other systems. On the other hand, machine mechanisms are closed systems where if they get energy, it has to be imported in. It has to be brought from the outside. In order for a car to run, you have to put fuel into it. So that misunderstanding has led to another problem, which is toxic, which is once humans are forced, like filling their tank with something they're not asking for, it can lead to runaway behavior. So let me tell you what that looks like when it happens in a human's head. So if you have heard from someone that you're behaving in a way that they find unacceptable by their standards, your mind will go to work on justifying over and over again. It'll replay it. And one of the biggest things I've found when I'm in companies and I'm asking people what happens with the 360-degree feedback or the performance reviews or some kind of topology they've been put in, all of which is defining them and telling them from outside how they're doing, they'll all say, well, I find myself trying to justify why I'm not that or why I am that and what it means. And so what you have people doing, instead of increasing their own self-reflectivity, they become increasingly trapped in the replaying in their mind of things that are disturbing to them or that they can't figure out whether fit them. So those are the first two. And that gives you, if we did nothing else, that would give you a sense of how toxic the idea of feedback can be.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. So can we dig into the article a little bit here in order to kind of see how they're approaching this in terms of the discernment, right? Because this is the thing we keep coming back to in these conversations. I'd love for us to dig into this article and see what's being advocated here by HBR and see if some more of these premises show up as we're going through it.
Let's try that.
Okay, great. As you look at the article, it's bad advice is being based, I think, on poor discernment is potentially what I'm hearing you say here. So help us to see what it is that you're seeing in this article.
Well, I think the fundamental flaw in the entire article is kind of what I've been hinting at, but let's make it more explicit, which is that all of the suggestions that they make here and how to give people what they call feedback that's useful are based on the idea of improving the person giving feedback rather than improving the self-reflective, self-managing, self-directed capacity of a human being seeking to do a good job in an organization. So what they do is give simplifying ideas like, how is it that you help people figure out they should do more or less of something rather than making it too complicated? Make sure that you're giving them feedback on what the organization values and what it wants from them. Now, just those two things, which are the first two recommendations they make, have a couple of flaws. Well, they have many, but they have a couple specifically built in. One is that we have focused on the right thing when we tell them more or less of. Now, that more or less is not necessarily what that person was working on in developing themselves, where their growth is going, where their own potential is. And so they're very easily redirected into a runaway kind of behavior. I'm now focusing on what you told me, and rather than working on where my own growth was happening. And I'm working on what the organization says it has as a standard. Now, that does lead to another premise, which I think is really important, which is the way we really want to structure organizational work is not so that the organization is predefining categories for people to achieve in, but increasingly having people become self-initiating in what it is that they want to contribute and where it is they're seeking to grow. But they do that in the context of not organizational values, which are prescribed to them, but of organizational strategy. So if people are able to see themselves relative to where it is the organization says it's going and where they have committed to support it, now we have a basis off of which people can be self-organizing, self-reflective, and also self-directing and redirecting.
Okay. And so it sounds like there's work to do here, and you're kind of pointing us in a direction around being self-managing, self-initiating, this kind of thinking. And so what might we do instead here? How would we start to kind of begin to work in this way or think about working in this way?
Well, there's another premise that I have. I mean, a couple of them. Let me go through those two, and then I'll answer that relative to this piece. I believe that organizations need to have an overarching corporate direction, an idea that holds the organization in a direction, but in service of something external. One of the downsides and why feedback gets to spinning in organizations is people can't see how they're having effects in the market, how they're having effect on customers or earth or communities. And as a result of that, you have to try and direct them with something else internal. I believe that you need to put in place developmental plans that are tied to an overall contribution, a significant contribution by the business, from which individuals are able to develop a plan of contribution and which they promise to be and are developed in order to be self-governing, self-directed. If there is no way for them to be developed internally, then you keep trying to do it behaviorally. So therefore, let me tell you what behavior you should change, which is one of the things I suggest in the Oracle. Keep it behavioral. Don't try and interpret it. Well, the interpretation comes because we're not able to see inside of people because only they can see it inside themselves. So a developmental plan is based on what I'm going to produce and contribute, but also how I'm going to grow myself internally. And we get a commitment, and an organization works really to help develop people against the plan they created. Now, that means another premise that I have is you have to, in the ongoing work you do in an organization, build the capacity for self-reflection. So let's talk about what that looks like, because you just don't ever see this. I bet you most people have never experienced it in their childhood, in school, in work, which is giving people the ability to reflect against an aim or an objective or some contribution they set for themselves using the engagement of a thinking partner or a resource who uses Socratic questions to ask people to reflect. Now, Socratic questions don't mean, which some people think is, I'm going to try and see if you can get the answer I've got in my head, but try and see if you can get people to see what's in their own experience. So if you have the premise that we should be always building self-reflection, you would start that with children. And instead of telling children you did that right or wrong, ask them, well, how did that work? What was the effect you think that had? How did that turn out? What would you do next time? All of those kinds of questions get people, they're a little more open-ended, but they're open-ended within the context of growing someone. So in an organization, in answer to your question about what would I say do instead, it'd be radically redesign the business so that you're designing it as a developmental organization where you have an organization that has a larger corporate direction. Individuals can develop plans, and then you build capability of people to measure how well they're doing in service of stakeholders, not just a performance goal, and then give them the capacity to reflect. That's what I would do instead. That's like massive change.
We'll be right back. I want to remind everyone about how to participate in the show by joining in our quiz on SurveyMonkey each week. This is where you can offer articles for review from HBR or other popular business written media. Find the link at businesssecondopinion.com. it's more fun to listen when you participate. To get educated about Carol's approach to critiquing popular ideas, you can also download her chapter at businesssecondopinion.com. Plus, there's a weekly drawing for a free copy of Carol's new book, The Regenerative Business. You can qualify for the drawing by participating in the quiz, write comments, or recommend an article for Carol to review. So I have some follow-up questions again this week from subscribers, and I have a few of them this week. So let's just start with this one here. So what if people cannot see themselves? Is that really a problem?
Well, most of us can't see ourselves very well because we live in a culture which has told us that over and over again. I have found that working with a business, it takes the first several months of having them realize that no matter how often they ask me how well they're doing, I will not answer it. And no matter how often managers have an opinion about someone, it takes a while for them to learn to ask a question for the other people to reflect instead. So there's no such thing as people who can't. There is a large percentage of us who have not developed that capacity. It is within our full ableness as a human being to do it, but it requires practice. It requires a different culture. It requires a different agreement with people who are being resources to us. So I think first we have to get over the idea that people can't do that. And secondly, we have to build a capability in people to do it by building a culture where that's assumed that will be happening. And then I think there needs to be a formal ritualized process where we are educating people and asking them to develop something they're working toward and then ask them to start to reflect on how it's happening. We talked about how what I do is redesign businesses. You can't just do this independent and separate from everything else. It has to become pervasive. And then pretty soon, I have seen within a year, usually two at the most, where you have 95% of the people in the organization who become enormously introspective, able to reflect, able to be non-judgmental about themselves and other people. And now you have a fundamentally different culture.
Okay, got it. So I ran into this week in my organization, actually. So what do I do if my organization requires giving and receiving feedback in maybe 360s? What do you recommend here?
Well, I have written a fairly significant little small book on this subject, and I think people need to introduce it. I've had several people do this, introduce it into the organization. One of the first ideas that's in it, and this is my fifth premises, by the way, and it's in this little short book about feedback, is that the majority of feedback is projection and belongs to the person who's giving it, not to the person who's receiving it. And that's a pretty big shock to people, that we think that we're so objective that we're able to stand back and we're able to see other people, but we can't. We see them through filters, and we usually have segmented, divided up, and are projecting what we're feeling and can't manage in ourselves onto other people. Psychology Today had a pretty amazing article that was published about a study where when they asked people eventually to reflect on themselves and to read the reflections they'd written for others and put their own name, they just substituted their own name for the person they were giving it to. And they had several people who ended up in tears, but almost all of them eventually could see that what they were doing was giving a projection. The second problem that you need to introduce to have a conversation so that you kind of bring, it's, I call it the stop exercise to say, hey, this is toxic. And that is that you need to be able to have it against something people have themselves said they're trying to do. Because if you have managers or even 360 degrees all the way around someone, people become very partial. They look at something they don't like or something that's on a list they've been given, and they will see others, and eventually they kind of all have a story. They're talking to each other about a person. And so it tends to become kind of a collusion against people who really are extraordinary performers. And I've watched this happen once you start to develop them. And so it undermines a whole lot of what your organization has when it says people are our most important asset. So this combination of projection and then the partial nature of what they do is a really undermining process. And the only way I know of is to have people introduce and say, I think we need to question this. I guess there is kind of a third thing that you have to do to get people to question it, which is to get over the idea that because it's better than what we did before, where nobody knew, we think it is something that is the best thing we can have. And we don't know that there's an even better way. So it's not going from people having no idea how they're doing to other people telling them. It's going from people having no idea how they're doing to learning to be able to see themselves. So it's like that third idea has to be introduced. And then, of course, you have to accept the idea that people can learn to do that.
So once again, I'm kind of stepping into a manager's perspective here and kind of taking on a little bit of a devil's advocate. So as a manager, if all I know is 360s and feedback, how can I, or employees that I have, other people that I work with, how can I or they know that they're making progress essentially in managing themselves? Because there's a lot of research out there that says that we're really bad at estimating and being able to track ourselves and know when we're doing these kind of things because they're subject to all kinds of cognitive biases. So how can we know as a group or as a team, how can we know we're making progress in that?
Right. So that question is being asked from inside of an old paradigm, which is somehow managers are supposed to be able to handle all of this. Mm-hmm. And we have to be able to get people to be able to see themselves through some external program that we impose. Mm-hmm. So you have to let go of that first. You have to let go of the idea that is all externally driven. And that's really the reason I think we can't get much progress, because we become very dependent on others telling us what our progress is. I mean, think about the number of things we have that do that, everything from performance reviews to incentives, rewards, recognition, all of which tell us who's the star in the organization. We've become so externally connected and externally dependent on understanding that until you're ready to fundamentally redesign the business where you believe that self-directedness is what will work and can change things. And you have to probably hear enough stories. Man, that's why I write books, to tell people, not only did this stuff work, but these people exceed what you're doing. When you think you're doing a good job, they have earnings, margins, and cash flow, which are bigger than yours. They have turnover rates, which are so low, they don't lose people. They have no trouble with talent acquisition and keeping. So you have to come to question that the fundamental structure and entire beliefs around which you have designed work are the best that you can do because they're better than the stuff you have, and get to the idea that what it means to be a developmental organization working with the kind of practices I'm talking about here will take you a couple of years. But when you do, and actually you start to get results quickly, but as you build it over time, it not only makes it better for you as a manager and for the people who work in the organization, but think about it, it actually helps democracy. It actually helps us all see that we're self-reliant, that we are creating the effects in the world around us because we can see ourselves and we can see our effects. There's one other thing I would say to managers, which is when you have people measuring against metrics others have set for them that don't have much meaning, they'll never get good at seeing how they're doing. When you have metrics that are based on how another person is doing, a customer, a child in your classroom, and you're measuring those things and you've made commitments to move those yourself in some particular way, people get really good at looking at how well they're doing because they understand the most important thing is the effect they're producing, not just the progress on somebody else's scale.
Okay. And so last question we have here. I feel like some of... Once again, a devil's advocate question. I feel like some of the biggest insights I have come from people who offered me something about me that I couldn't see. So what's wrong with that?
Well, first, one never knows whether it was actually true. I have a bit of research, particularly looking at children and how much people came to believe what they were told by their parents. And we all know we still have our parents' voice in our head. So I always tell people first, don't even assume that what you were told and what you heard was useful, was accurate, because again, it may be a projection. The other thing is that it's very often partial. It's focused on some shortfall or gap that really is measured by someone else. And it's that same thing where I said, you can say this is better than what I used to do, But I believe that our attachment to something better is the enemy of getting to something that really works and grows us. And so the fact that you feel like you got something from someone giving you, quote, feedback is not the same thing as being in a conversation and being able to understand yourself in that conversation, see it and manage it in the moment, and also to be able to ascertain and use your discernment about whether it's what's working on. I mean, I've had a couple of people say to me, well, you ought to work on agreeing with people more often. You ought to be helping them feel better about what they're doing rather than offer the kind of ideas that are contrarian. And I think
that seems highly unlikely.
Right. Seems highly unlikely. And so people are giving me something to work on that's actually contraindicative to my essence. And I actually don't do it unless I believe people can use it and I do it in a way which they can grow from it. And so often the feedback people give me just means they're insecure. They don't have an ability to work with it. And, you know, not very helpful. So I have to use my own discernment. And that way I don't get runaway behavior, which we were talking about earlier.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you so much for your time again today, Carol.
You're welcome.
Do you want to suggest articles for Carol to review? Or maybe post questions to her for her to answer? Or maybe even argue with her response and get a second opinion? Become a member at businesssecondopinion.com. Subscribe and review this podcast and get put in a drawing to win a copy of the new book, The Regenerative Business, or a poster of readers' favorite quotes from the book. Also subscribe to the blog that accompanies the podcast and newsletter that keeps you up to speed on what's coming next. So that's the end of season one. We hope you enjoyed it, and we'll be back January 4th with season 2 of Business Second Opinion.